Your heart is nearly breaking. The Tokyo tax is breaking. There's something else that's breaking. I think it is the wind. Have nothing hold on to. Grand Parker in Japan. And every fifth of that for discovering Japan.
Koko wa doko desu ka? Why do I speak Japanese like that? Koko wa doko desu ka? I think it's because I've watched too many Ozu movies. And I speak Japanese like Shishu Ryu instead of a modern person. And I don't speak Japanese, that's the thing. Just a few phrases here and there. And I'm flying back on the plane right now from Japan. And I'm sitting in my seat and I feel as if I'm being smuggled out of East Germany in the seat of a car. Just don't move. There's no one in the car, guard. All right, well, go ahead then. Don't move in there. I can't move. That's the way I feel. And I'm strapped in with my restless leg syndrome and expectations. And I'm flying 30,000 feet over the earth. Oh my goodness, I'm in space. I'm declaring it. I know I'm not. I'm in the atmosphere, but it feels like space to me. And it's the same. I wouldn't know it if I was in space. So if you were just flying to Exuma, you wouldn't know the difference between that and being in a space capsule, really, if you were just going coach. It's very cramped, and there's not a lot of air, so I try to take my breaths sparingly. And I'm making sense now of what just happened to me in Japan. And I know that's a lot of people have done that. So many people have visited there, and too many almost visiting there now. And I made myself one of them. I say, hey, you know who got me to go? I think Grand Parker. I don't know him personally, but he's like, the Tokyo taxi is waiting or something. I said, okay, it's waiting for me then. I felt guilty. That's another thing I have in common with the Japanese. I go, I'm not being polite enough. I feel like I'm hurting you. So I have a lovely experience, but right now I'm so tired. I'm tired, but I can't sleep. Because I'm in all sorts of quasi-pain. And discomfort is really what they call it. And sometimes discomfort can be so bad, you can perish from it. Have you ever been sitting on a bench or something and you go, this is so hard on my coccyx, I'm gonna die. And I'm not gonna make it through this JV baseball game. And I really feel like that. That's the way I feel with life. I'm not gonna make it through this JV baseball game. Much less. Some other challenging thing, like an elementary school awards ceremony, which also has damaged my posterior. Sitting there, I go, oh, for one child, I have to sit through 1,000 children I'm uninterested. I mean, I bless them. I want them to live good, long lives, but the minutia of it is not my concern. I'm here for my nephew or what have you, and everybody else is, what do you call it? Chafe. And so, chafe. Chafe is when your pants are rubbing on you real bad, like mine are now. And there's, again, nothing you can do. And I love that they give you a blanket. I don't want to do airplane material. Have you seen this? Have you been on an airplane? But they give you, the blanket they give you is basically a handkerchief. And a sturdy one. And you try to go, I don't know what part, I have to prioritize what to cover. I guess my knee. You don't know. Sometimes I just put it on my head like I'm in a Japanese onsen. Well, here, I tell you, listen, this is what I got to do. I'm going to just watch one of these in-flight movies. And I will have to tell you about this, though. When the plane started up, or whatever they call it. And you can't watch the movies yet because, what's the name? I don't want to name the airline I was on. I'll call it Beta. So Beta is very proud of themselves. And they showed a little film about how they'd been in business for decades, going back, I don't know, they said to the 16th century. I think they meant the 17th century, 1600s, right? But Beta. And so they showed pilots and flight attendants down through the years what they would have been wearing. They'd had powdered wigs at one point. And a lot of times the pilots had a tri-cornered hat or what have you. It was wonderful. One of them looked like Captain Crunch, I thought. And he was an Admiral pilot. And then in the 20s, they were on a Ford tri-motor. Try talking over that. And this is bad enough where they pump in the brown noise so that you can sleep, but it's incessant. Say, okay, enough. I think they really could make a plane cabin silent. They just don't want to because they're trying to lull you to sleep. Because then we won't have to. Then you won't be pressing the button all the time. I'm tired. I'm thirsty. Like a child. And then your nursemaid has to come and say, what do you want? I say, well, I'm feeling like I'm going to throw up. And they say, well, there should be a bag in there. Yeah, but the one in here is all full of throw up already. There was a incident on the plane. Not really an incident. It was breakfast. They served these kind of breakfast calzones, and one person threw up, and then another person threw up, and then, you know, throwing up is like yawning. It's kind of contagious. Say, hey, you know what? I'm going to throw up, too, or crossing your arm. Like if you're standing around having a conversation and one person crosses their arm, then another person does. Well, puking your guts out is like that. See, one person does it, and you go, you know what? I'm inspired. I'm going to also go team vomitous. And so that blah, happened a lot. And people find their chest voices when they do that. It's great if you're a singer. So I finally found my chest voice. And I'd been puking in a falsetto before. And that's the counter. What do you call that? Not countertenor. Is it countertenor? Countertenor. That's just something else. I wish I could sing. Well, I'm going to watch one of these movies now. I watched a couple of them already, and I got it. Frankly, they were a little bit disappointing. And Baby Avengers was the worst. It was the Avengers, but they were all babies. It's like Baby Hulk and everything, and I was uninterested in that. And it was different actors. I don't know, maybe it was CGI even. I don't know. But that was one. And then there's, I think there was a Seth Rogen one called Seth Rogen, but he wasn't Seth Rogen. It was another dimension. That one I could have dreamed. I don't know. It's all a blur, you know. Sometimes I do nod off. I don't think I've fallen asleep on the plane, but then I wake up and I go, well, whose saliva is this on my chest? That must be. That's someone's spit. And there's some in my beard. But I looked at the security camera footage, and it was that fella in the next aisle over, who was just fascinated with my frames, my eyeglass frames. And he was, I guess he's kind of breathing through his mouth because of allergies. And he's checking them out all night long, it looked like. Well, I'm going to watch this now. I've got my earbuds in. I call them earbuds because they're my little friends that go in my ear. And earbuds. And if they were like flower buds, that would be terrifying because that means they're going to open. And then you won't get them out. And they're like those things that you put into drywall to hold a screw. You don't want that in your ear. So I'm going to put these little earbuds in or head in first class. They get proper ear goggles, as the kids used to call them. The kids who are now my age. But those big headphones, they get like 70s headphones in first class. All sorts of things they get in first class. My goodness. Children don't listen to this, but there was an adult toy section there I saw in first class. I don't know who would take advantage of that. But they eat steak or not steak, like they had not meat or something too. So you could be just the carnivoriest carnivore or the veganiest vegan and they would accommodate you. But in the regular people, they go, do you want chicken or pasta? That's it. You go, all right, well. But the food is interesting to me. It was as a child. I try to get my childlike qualities back and go, I want to eat something out of an envelope. When I was a kid, I was fascinated with astronaut food. They were selling, the astronauts had just gone up. Some of them blew up, some of them didn't. I mean, this was pre-shuttle. Not blew up, but it caught fire back then. But some of them made it and everything. So astronauts and astronautic was very popular, and so was their food. And people were eating sort of dehydrated chocolate sticks, but they weren't peeing in bags. So it's just one half of the equation. They didn't like the other astronaut stuff, I suppose. But the food, including, I don't want to promote a beverage and everything, but it's hard not to, let's just call it ping pong. No, because it's Tang. Tang is short for tangy. And they had Tang, and then people discovered you could add water to it and make a drink out of it. And you didn't need to just use it like snuff, is what people were doing. I'm going to just take a big dip of Tang to my chick of gum, or just like they did tobacco snuff when people laughed like that. And they would, when they had powdered wigs, your captain would go, "This is your captain speaking," like that, and he'd have a long wig, and you go, "Oh, why does the captain have a drawn-on mole?" Well, he needs that to pilot the plane. And this was, back when the Fly Montgolfier brothers, and you'd get on their balloon, and they would have cabin service. They were discontinuing it because we were starting our final descent. And back down they'd go to the ground. Oh my gosh, I love traveling, but it's exhausting. I now know how Martin and Lewis felt when they discovered the Arctic or whatever. Some of them got, not Lewis, Lewis Meriwether, Martin Meriwether, and Livingston, I presume. Anybody talks like that? Could you imagine you show up, you go all that way and say, "Mr. Livingston, I presume," and you go, "Oh, what? You're one of those types. No, thank you. I'm turning around and leaving. I don't care what we're going to discover." No one ever discovers anything. It's like someone discovering your living room. I'm waiting for that, somebody to walk in my front door and go, "Helen, I discovered a house." "No, hey, my house." "Well, it's new to me, so it's mine." It isn't yours. My goodness. And every place I visit, I know I'm visiting because I was clued in to very young that I'm mortal. So I know when I walk upon any land that it's temporary, nobody, I can't really own it. I remember thinking that in Pennsylvania when someone said, "All of this was William Penn's." I go, "Well, who cares? He didn't go, what's he going to do with it?" I always think of that. If I had a lot of land, I'd run naked on it. But you can only run naked so far. And they go, "Oh, that was a lot. I guess it turned out I only need a couple acres. And then and I could loop." But yeah, what's the point of having all that when you die? He could leave it to his children. Then they get to enjoy it. That's no fun. But you can't live forever. Oh, mano no aware. What's that? That's the pathos of things. The temporary nature of beauty. As you see it's passing, you get a little wistful. I don't. I go into full-on grief. I had some weeping spells because of my Stendhal syndrome or something. I don't know. But I get overwhelmed. I get moved. And I realized it's not a spiritual gift. It's some sort of, neuroses. Or I don't know what it is. It doesn't feel he's so sensitive. No, I don't know. I think it's neurological. But, when I get to a spectacular place, sometimes I get overwhelmed, especially if I get a thought, and if I put it all together and I think of my life and the things I love and those I love and how they keep me chained to life, and it's difficult to sort of separate myself and cope with my own mortality and all that, and I go into hysterics. And sometimes if you're on a tour group, that's not appropriate. They go, "You're all gonna be okay." "I'm fine. I'm just really happy. I moved." Like that, and so, okay. I wish I could say that in Japanese. It would have been, saved some trouble. But I had many adventures. I'm going to get to them. But now I'm going to watch this movie called Akabeko Saves the Day. And Akabeko is a red cow. And it's Akabeko of Aizu Wakamatsu. And That's what I'm going to watch. So that's the... I hope it has subtitles. You know, I thought the other day I could have sworn that I spoke Japanese, but it's just because I'm so good at reading the subtitles on Shogun. And I'm having a hard time. Who was in the first one? Richard Chamberlain or something? Or is that Ravenclaw or something? Weed. He was in everything. I don't know. I remember watching it as a kid and then thinking, I think I know Japanese. I know what they're saying. That happens to me with Ozu movies. I go, I'm pretty sure I already speak those language. And I don't. It's just, you know, you get really good at reading your own language. So I'm pretty good at it. Well, I'm going to watch this movie about Akabeko, the red cow, who saves Aizu. And I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. Hey, it's me, Hardy. I'm here with my friend.
Hey.
He's the red cow, Akabeko of Aizu.
I'm here to save the day.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so great to have a cow friend.
I brought you salt from the mountain.
Salt? Well, we're so far from the sea. How did you get that?
Well, the hot springs have minerals in them, and I made salt from that, and it took a lot.
Oh, I imagine.
Yeah, man.
So, that's good. Thank you for bringing us the miracle of salt, Akabeko. I might be mixing up my myths, but I think it was you.
Hey, I don't know.
But it's so great to have a cow friend. You're so calming. I just feel really centered in your presence.
Yeah. You want to hang?
Yeah, let's hang out sometime.
Sometime? What about now?
Well, yeah.
We're already hanging.
We are already hanging.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Yeah.
What?
Nothing. I was just making noise.
Yeah, it sure is relaxing hanging out with my cow friend. No expectations. Just fully in the moment.
In the moment.
Not worrying about our mortality or anything.
Not worried about our what now?
Oh, I didn't. Yeah, maybe that's not a concept I want to bring up.
Yeah.
It's me and my cow.
Me and your red cow.
It's beautiful. Oh, many instances where I just felt like it was me and nature, and I felt no pressure, especially when you're in a foreign country. You don't have to be anything, really, except not obnoxious. That's what I recommend. It's just there's people trying to go about their day. Be beautiful to them. And it's not about you. And I try to be as low-key as possible. That doesn't work out always, because sometimes I like to go places in Japan that maybe don't have a lot of people who look like me. And who looks like me? I don't know. Brian Eno. But somebody walking around, and I put on my bucket hat and everything. I try to stay low-key for being 6'2". And they don't have the yukata in my size. And so it's not supposed to be above your knees. Well, I don't know what to say. But there's even taller people than me visiting. And there they are, heads bobbing across the crowd. And it's beautiful. But really, when I'm anywhere, I think, where am I? This is an unanswerable question. Because by the time you start thinking about it, you have moved, just physically in the universe. Also, everything in you is in motion constantly. You cannot say for sure from the smallest particle where it is, because it's the minute you locate it, that's not where it is anymore. You fix it in time, and that's not how things work. So there's only when-where. When-where is the only, you can kind of get there, but even then, you're not saying any kind of why. A when-where why is a more important thing to answer. And a when-where why, I think, can't be answered literally. When-where why can only, when-where why can only be answered poetically. And so what I try to do is describe my feelings when I am in a place. And I will tell you now about my feelings when I was in two certain places in Fukushima Prefecture in Japan. In Fukushima Prefecture in Japan, I was in two cities. The capital of the prefecture, Fukushima City. And then I was in Aizu Wakamatsu, which is a former samurai domain. The Aizu domain. Now, what was the Aizu domain? Well, there was a head guy, a lord, a daimyo, and he was kind of a feudal head, and he had some soldiers called samurai. And these samurai did things like fight with them swords and everything. Andy Griffith telling it. What it was samurai warfare. I dropped my big katana drink. So that's what it was. So this is a samurai capital, and there's a castle there. Now, the castle is a beautiful, multiple-storied pagoda-y looking thing, right? And the original one has collapsed. They rebuilt it in the 60s. But this one goes back to the Boshin War in the 1860s. Now, I'm not going to go into the details of the Boshin War, but just say a lot of samurai fought. And also, I want to use the word shogunate. I love it. So it's fun to say. It's more fun to say than shogun. Shogun just sounds like a show. Shogunate sounds like we're going to do something. You ready to shogunate? I think I am. So I visited this site. And it was the site also of a battle where the samurais went at it. Imagine the clacking swords and all, and also guns. They had guns and they shot each other, and that's how I guess most people died. And I went to this castle, and one of the first things you see is that there is a very famous tea house there, because one of the head tea ceremony masters that ever lived and who spawned the current day branches did his thing there. And so there's this historic, kind of national historic site of a tea house. So if you're into tea ceremony things, this is a really special place. And so they let you not go in there, but they'll sit you down outside and say, you want some matcha? And go, yeah. And then go, but drink it this way, though. So they give you a little sweetie, and you eat your little sweetie, and then they say, here's your matcha, and you drink that, and it's bitter. So you get some sweet, and you get some bitter. And then you start thinking, that's life. That's what people say. It's pretty obvious what's going on. You're just being made. I'm forcing you through art and ritual to think about these complementary feelings in life, because you're experiencing them together. And if you're like traveling with loved ones and you're having these transcendent experiences of discovery and everything, they're really nice, but they're also really temporary. And so you desperately try to capture them with cameras and everything. I'm going to remember this. I can't forget this. And you treat the memories like you're in one of those machines where dollar bills are flying all around on a game show, and they're like, grab as many dollar bills as you can. You're trying to do that with memories, because this moment, I've got to preserve it. This happiness, this sweetness. And unless you're reminded, you know, about the bitterness inherent in all of it, the fact that it'll be over and that it's ending as soon as it's happening. And I think you need tea and a little sweetie to experience that. And so into the castle we go. Our tour guide said, do you know who lived in the castle? And we named a bunch of people. And she goes, no, you idiots, nobody. It's a castle. So we go in there. She said it much nicer than that. And we saw some samurai helmets and things like that. And then this sound came from the lower floors. And I recognized the sound. It's the sound I've heard in museums before. You know, when this was a kind of museum-like place. And what it is, it's the sound of hundreds of fifth graders. It was a field trip, many field trip busloads of classrooms of children. They couldn't have even all been from the same school. They had to be just from the same district. I think they were all from Miyagi Prefecture, and they had all come there on the same day, busloads, for their annual tour of the castle at Aizu, Truga Castle. And so the castle, filled with all these artifacts of war, swords, and stories of death, is now filled with the delightful sounds of children. Well, the mixed blessing. And they themselves are sweetness and bitterness wrapped all in one. And here they are in the heart of bitterness, this great castle. A monument to disappointment, really, isn't it? Because all war ends in loss. And this war was lost. And so the people in it had to move on and get different jobs. Some of them started the Aizu Wakamatsu Farm, what was it called? Tea and Silk Farm in San Francisco. And one of the rich folks was financing it from Japan, and it lasted about a year because I guess mulberry trees don't really grow in San Francisco. But I was thinking, oh, this mixed thing, this bitter shrine filled of sweetness, here we go. And I looked out onto the view, and the view was of a great mountain, and that mountain was a volcano that had erupted in 1888, blowing its top off and throwing rocks and lava and ash everywhere and killing 400 people. And 400 people in a sparsely populated rural area, that's pretty good. That'll tell you. That's some good destruction. And I thought about that, and I thought about how peaceful all the little homes were there now. Time. So during that battle, a pretty awful thing happened. There was a troop of young people, samurais in training, Teen Samurai, which sounds like a great cartoon series, and it's going to be fun, and it's one of the ABC's Saturday morning lineup, along with the Wacky Doodle crew or something. Mod Buggy. And so they were called the Byakutai, the White Tiger Unit. And there was a bunch of teenagers, I think from like 15 to 20-something. And during this particularly heated battle, they left behind the 14 to 16-year-olds, about 12 of them. Well, everybody out went out and said, "We're going to go war. Y'all stay here." "Well, we want to come too." "No. No, you barely have your driver's license. You are not coming out to war. Stay here. Y'all are beautiful, precious. You're our smartest kids. You're our best athletes here. We just keep you nice to hear. Don't go anywhere." So they went out and they stashed those warriors near this old Buddhist shrine. And those young kids saw some smoke in the distance, and they thought that the castle had fallen and that the battle was over. And so they did what any good samurai would do. They said, "I think it's time to seppuku." I don't want to say what, to maybe, to end their lives. And so they did. But the battle wasn't over. They'd made a mistake. But they were so, learning the ways and everything. Now, this is a terrible, terrible thing. And never a good idea. And what a waste and needless death. You're going to die anyway. Can't we all just grow old together? Well, one of the kids didn't do it right, and he lived. And that's how we even know the story. And I'm glad that I hope those values are all gone. Because at this site of their graves, there's two gifts that were people that were impressed and thought the story was a good story and that people should be like that. And one gift is from Mussolini, and the other gift is from Hitler. They both heard the story, and they thought it was neat. I hear it, and I go, "No, war never. Don't do that for anybody or anything." If you see smoke in the distance, you go, "All right, I'm out." And then you just put on your you put on your peasant disguise and go, I am but a poor beggar. And you walk into the woods and then you start your life somewhere else, like Jean Valjean. But don't harm yourself because you're beautiful and precious and temporary anyway. So let's see. I want to see you grow old and rot. That's the fun part, is diminishing. Just like Hobo in the Hobbit. You just go and I'm going to sail off into the other land, like that, into Pure Land, they would say, maybe there. I didn't know that Canon cameras were named after Avalokiteshvara, but I guess they are. They're named after Kuan Yin, Canon. So isn't that interesting? So if you have a Canon camera, you really have, you know, it's Buddhist. You have a Buddhist camera. And I have, my camera brand is Shinto. No, there's no such camera brand. I don't think so. Maybe that's what Pentax means. This is a movie.
Yeah, about you and me.
It is. It's about you and me, my friend, the red cow, and this place, this crazy place I'm in, because it's so beautiful. And I think about people were whipping swords around. And they still love it. Oh, my goodness. We still feel, because I think it's scary out there. And you would say, I wish I was a mighty warrior and afraid of nothing. But I think warriors are afraid. They just override it. But they shouldn't have to. Let's not put them in that position any longer, I think. Now, you should be able to defend yourself from, like, fruit. So if someone's tossing something at you, I'm still getting over it. I got in trouble in second grade for lobbing a mango at a kid. So we were literally playing catch. I throw it at him. He does that thing that second graders do sometimes where he doesn't even put his hands up. The mango smacks him in the face. Who gets in trouble for throwing a mango at someone's head? Me, the most gentle kid in the second grade. And they're going, you threw that. And the injustice was so great, I couldn't apologize. Because I go, yeah, I'm sorry, but you're misreading the intent. And I know you're all mad because you're in charge of the kids and one of them get hurt on your watch, right? So you want to take it out on me. Blame the second grader because you're an incompetent teacher. You couldn't reach out there, catch that mango in mid-flight or whatever. Or why is there a mango on the playground is another thing I didn't remember. That's a Chekhov's mango. I guess it was just sitting there. It couldn't not be there without getting lobbed to somebody's head. Now it's part of my story. And I love telling you stories. I kind of want them to go somewhere. Hey, if I got any of my facts wrong, I don't care. Facts are not really what I'm getting at. And I know that some of you think that's there's a lack of justice there. Well, he may have said the name of the place wrong. Or it's all sort of the same thing. Well, that might be true, but if I'm trying to convey a feeling and you're getting distracted by that, that's fine. I'm sorry, but I can't plan for that too much. I'm really here for flavor. It's all about flavor, and sometimes the thing doesn't look so good, you know, but it tastes good, and that's what I'm more concerned. I'll make it as aesthetically pleasing as possible. I'm trying to make it look good to the eye. I want my radio show to look to be obviously good sometimes, and I know that sort of the best I've been able to do is what's the opposite of obvious, subtly or something, obscurely good, subtly good. It took me a while, and I love that. That's my favorite thing. So first, you know, I listened to Hardy. And I said, I don't know, this I do not get. And then people changed the word order there. This I do now get, or something. Now not do I not get it. And then we're friends. I feel like maybe it just takes me a long time to get to the point. I am very much of the philosophy that you should rhyme of the Ancient Mariner people. Grab them by the arm. Let them hear the whole story. You know, everybody wants to walk by, you know, what's the synopsis? Speed dating. If you sit at my speed dating table, we might be there for days.
because it's really not the information. You've got to be there long enough to experience the atmosphere, to feel it, to sense other things, to explore. And I think you ought to be able to explore things and find things between the lines. And Between the Lions was a children's show, that making that pun. There was one called Between the Leons, which is another word for lion. And it was Leon, the hitman, Jean Reno, Between the Jean Renaults. It was so good. All these shows when I was not a kid. I was thinking the other day how different, you know, when being in Japan, that sometimes culturally there's some overlap and sometimes there's not. So I was with a younger Japanese friend. So we're not even the same generation. So I was trying to explore, what kind of movies do you like? And he said, David Lynch. And I said, well, we don't have him in the U.S. I don't know. Who is that? No, that was very exciting. And I was like, I knew it. I knew it because of the Georgia Coffee ads and stuff like that. I knew y'all were into Twin Peaks. And it was so exciting. And my friend Hibeki had seen many David Lynch movies. And then I said, wow, you know who else I like? He said, who? I said, Ozu. He said, I don't know who that is. I said, Yasujiro Ozu. He said, I don't know who that is. And I said, he made movies, and I don't know who that is. So I started quizzing all my Japanese friends and acquaintances. I don't have a ton, but I was like, do you know who Ozu is? And they're like, no, I don't know. And I guess that's not crazy. You know, it's I think his movies have now are mainly have a fandom of film nerds. So if you've encountered one at all, it's probably Tokyo Story. And if you've encountered it, it's probably because you go, I'm going to watch the top 50 movies of all time. So you go and you get a list and you go, this one seems to be popping up a lot. And you watch it and you realize, oh, good Lord, this might be one of the greatest things I've ever seen. Now, it takes a minute, right? It's slow, but it's not slow for slow's sake. It's at life pace. And that really appeals to me. You know, I like to take my time. Because if you're really trying to grow something, you know, even if it's a feeling or an emotion, it does. Growth takes time. And even memories, for them to really stick, they have to be there for a little bit to go into long-term memory. And so I think to go into deep feelings, it takes a minute. Now, some of you I've been talking to for decades. And I feel like together we have sort of gone places that are extraordinary. Because be able to have a dialogue, or in this case, a one-sided dialogue with someone for that long, is pretty exciting. It's as if it were a television series, you know, and has time to develop and grow and say, wow, I've been watching this for so long. Why doesn't Susan Lucci win an Emmy? Well, I'm pointing to myself when I say Susan Lucci. It was in quotes. I feel like Susan Lucci is one of my... Sometimes I wear Saint medals, and I wear Saint Rocco sometime, and then sometimes I'll wear Saint Gabriel, and then sainted Susan Lucci. Wear that sometimes, and that's just to keep going. Keep going. You're good. Come on now. People take you for granted because they see you every day there on I'm sorry, it's been so long. Kurt's going to get mad at me. Kurt said, I want you to, you watch all my children? Yeah, I said, I would like you to do my wedding. And that's the fandom. It's deep. Oh, to be with you this long, sitting there, and to get worn with you, to get wabi-sabi, that beauty of that, of the worn-inness, you know, the kind of a flawed perfection.
something that can only be attained by giving something consideration over time, I think. You know, we are lived in together, you and I. So, if you were going to ask me, where are you? Where are we? I would say, together. That's where we are. And I think that's the where that matters. And that can be really geographically anywhere. And it can be temporally anywhere. Temporally. That means time that's been coated in batter and fried. Delicious. It's very delicious. Oh, I have eaten so many great foods.
Yes, like salt ramen, mountain salt ramen.
Yes, not just ordinary salt ramen, but mountain salt ramen from Aizu. And that was, I was so close to a famous ramen shop in Fukushima City. And I was like, I want to go to this famous ramen shop that if you're a ramen nut, it's on everybody's like top 10 list of ones to go to in your life. And it was right there. And they said to me, yeah, you know, it's really crowded because everybody goes there because it's amazing. I was like, well, okay. So I did not go. Just the same way as I was like a block from Ozu's grave, and I didn't go because I heard that he was dead. Well, that's why the grave is there. And I thought, I think I'm going to go for the art because I think a couple minutes with the dead Ozu would not be as interesting as revisiting some things that he felt like saying or showing or having me experience. And that's what I wanted to do, is I wanted to go have experiences with people. And I did. So instead of his grave, I went to the great Buddha. And it's in Kamakura too. And it's a big metal oven, basically. It's a giant Buddha, but it's metal and hollow. And you can go in it. So people march in it like that. And I thought, I think a witch owns this and she's about to make us into cookies. And it's just like, oh, you know, go come inside the big Buddha. Isn't it beautiful? Yeah, it is. Go inside, children. And we all went in, and then we were in this thing, and it had doors on its back, like windows, because if they shut, we'd suffocate, because it literally is a giant, big Buddha pizza oven made of metal. And I was like, oh, hot. I mean, I'm going to faint. I got to get out of here. And I did, so I did not turn into cookies, but it looked like it was, that's what was going to happen. But it was interesting to me because I had never been in the Buddha, and he's more spacious than I thought too. If it was just me, I'd be like, hey, I could maybe set up a little cot here and live in the Buddha. But you can't do that. You actually have to come out, and you go out the same way you come in. I think it'd be funny if you came out of the bottom. But you don't. You just came out some kind of door in the side. And you have to be... I was a little too large to go in. There was no... There should have been a little sign that said, unless you're the size of a normal person, don't go in. And what's normal though, right? That's what I was like. It was a very touristy spot, you know, no doubt. And... I walked there through a neighborhood, a beautiful neighborhood with a kind of look like expensive houses. Because I think if the Buddha's your neighbor, that's good for property values probably. And you know who's next door, don't you? You know, Amida. So I don't know if that, you know, raised property value or everything. But it was nice to even a touristy spot to me is fun because then I can look at people, say, why are they here? I wonder. Are they venerating? Are they gawking? Are they told they should come here? I mean, it is a beautiful spot and it is kind of serene, but for all of us chattering apes. And I thought it was beautiful, and I love to have kind of touristy experiences anyway if they're not too crazy. But I also like to see people and be with them. So I was with some school children who asked me questions. And I was at an elementary school, and it was Keiko Sensei's English class. And they asked, they stood up and asked me questions, and they said, "What do you like about Japanese people?" And I said, "They are polite and gracious." And nobody knew the word gracious, and the teacher didn't know the word gracious. And I was trying to explain grace without going out on a tangent. And just looks of confusion. I was hoping to get baseball questions, right? I was like, who likes the Yokohama Bay Stars? Anybody? Anyone? But they asked me what my favorite food was, and I lied. And I don't know why I lied. I was just wanted to say something they knew, right? You know, so I said fried chicken because I'm from Kentucky. And I know they knew what Kentucky Fried Chicken was. So I wanted some of their expectations to be met, you know. But if they said, "What's your favorite American food?" And I said, you know, natto, and that's not American. So it isn't my, I love it though. Isn't that funny? I'm one of the 1% of people on earth. But I enjoy some natto. But I also enjoy some French cheeses that smell like someone who doesn't have great hygiene. And I don't, but that's, here's the funny that I don't like stinky people. And yet the stinky cheese is fine. And I don't even know if there's a difference really, as far as like the molecules. They could be the same molecules. Can you imagine that? It's like, boy, this I love, you know, but this one, you know, so the Taleggio, yeah. But would I eat an actual sock? Probably not, you know. I'm going to stick my face in a sneaker. Certainly, I've seen cats that like it. Say, boy, sneaker cheese, same thing. They don't make any difference. They'll rub their face right in the either one. But I'm funny that way. So I didn't even take my shoes off on the plane because I was like, I don't know that this is. I've got the opposite thing. I think taking your in Japan, I had to take my shoes off, obviously, and I don't mind. But I also feel like, are you sure you want me to do that? I have pretty good foot hygiene, though. I like to clean them regularly. I check them out. I clip the things that grow on the ends and all that kind of thing. I pride myself on having well taken care of feet. I don't get them done professionally. I do everything myself. All the art on my walls is art I've made. And I pretty much, is it hard to manicure yourself? Yes. Do you have to do one hand at the time? Yeah, but you do that when you go to the professionals anyway. So I just use my right hand, takes care of my left, and my left hand is the caregiver of my right. And it doesn't get the job done quite as well because it's not as coordinated, but we don't say anything. Nobody says anything. It's beautiful. I've noticed that. My right hand never says like, "I can do things better than you. You can't use chopsticks." And my left hand goes, "Oh." And it can't, but, my left hand goes, you can't do a bar chord, and it's right. So I know that's weird. Why is that? I don't know. That's strange. Yeah, I feel like my left hand's over there managing pretty well on that fretboard. I don't know why I can't pick up a set of chopsticks. Then it pretends like, "Oh, I can't do this." I think it's just being lazy. "Oh, this is hard. Hard? Man, I saw you do that run right there. You work fine, it looks like. Don't pretend you can't use a pencil. I think you're lying. I call you out, left hand." And sometimes they don't know what the other's doing, but that's on purpose. Because I like to, sometimes I pocket one to keep it ready. And then I'll pocket the other. You know how that is. It's like pirates moving the patch. You know, I gotta keep one eye acclimated. So I always keep one hand ready. I'd love to get one of those Secret Service fake arms. I know they sell them at Spencer's or something, but it looks like you've, you know, your arm is, the other arm is really holding a gun inside your coat. And then there's the fake arm. It looks like you've got two arms. You know, one's hanging at your side, but your right one is actually inside the coat with a gun, and I would like to do that, but it wouldn't be a gun. It'd be something else, like a vape or something. Go, "Yeah, I'm not doing anything," and
And then you can just bring it up to your necktie. And he goes, is that another hand? No, my hand's, look, you can see it. It's in my sleeve. Yeah, I don't need a gun. I'm not protecting anybody or myself. So don't you want to protect yourself? I don't know. Not necessarily. Not if it's going to be effort. But I'm not inviting anybody. Don't come and mug me just because of that. Because maybe I'll be having a bad day. So I wouldn't gamble. But yeah, I don't want to. When I protect somebody else, that's a little easier. That's because I, those side dives, I've been practicing that in case I have to dive in front of somebody, like an arrow's coming at him. I go, no. And then I sacrifice myself for the young person. I take the arrow. And then I thought, can I just get like an arrow board where the arrow's coming? Instead of diving in front of it, I stick out the board. You used your arrow board. I call it arrow board. It's cricket bat. So we're standing there together. There's an arrow coming at you. Instead of me diving in front of you, it's really almost quicker to stick the cricket bat out. I catch the arrow, and it doesn't hit you. Sometimes I catch the arrow, and it doesn't hit you. I could get a bigger one. Instead of a cricket bat, a peel, a baking peel, a large peel, pizza peel.
Pizzas have peels?
Yeah, some of them you got to peel. Like the New Haven pizza, that's what the A is. That's the peel, A pizza. It's just, you take that off. That part you take off. Don't eat that. It's a wrapper. That's wax. That's not rind. Rind. I bet there's country guys named Rind. I wonder if there is. Like R-I-N-D.
That's a name I'd heard. Rind.
No, it's Ryan.
Rind. With a D.
Ryan Dawson. Like that. You'd say it like that. Oh, there's so many names. I tried to. The thing about speaking in Japan, so I can say all my polite words and everything. I'm not going to say them for you because you'll correct my pronunciation. And I find it discouraging. And I want to learn more. And I don't care if I speak a language broken. That's not matters. What matters is you get what you ordered. And with a machine, that's much. There's a lot of it you do with a vending machine. I know all my polite words. The problem is, and this happens when I lived in France, is that people insist sometimes on speaking back to you. And then you got to go, bah, 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 bah. That's enough. I don't quite understand that. French people they could tell that I wouldn't understand what they were going to say. And then they would say it anyway. And most people just speak to you and not in Japan, though. I'm in Europe, more people speak English. In Tokyo, everything's English. But the farther you get away, you really have to be sometimes creative with your communication. And I love that. And what I've discovered, what works for me, is being threatening. I go, get me! No, that's not, I'm kidding. I wouldn't do that. I drew a picture, and then I go, this right now! I do not do that. I go, this right here, kudasai. And I go, you speak Japanese with a fake Southern accent. I do. No, this is, there's all different ways to communicate. And, if there weren't, there wouldn't be all those different ways to communicate. But there are, and we know there are. And you know that when anybody's making an effort to communicate with you, that everybody loves that and responds to that. You try to say, what is it? What is it, boy? And I do feel a bit like that when I'm there. I say, what is it? Is it a fire? Even if I'm seen as a monkey, I feel like people like monkeys. And so, there's a monkey among us. Well, yes. And as long as he's not flinging poo or stealing or hurting, I think it's fine. It's funny. I bet he'll do something funny. So it'd be fun to see what he does with this piece of food. I'd be like, he's not even using a fork. That kind of thing. So I don't mind being amusing. I don't play the clown or anything. I realize, this will just be me making mistakes will be amusing enough. I don't have to clown it up. I'm not Osama Dazai. So
I have read a little bit of some Japanese literature. Not much, and all of it in translation, and some of it translated into Pig Latin, so that I feel like I'm reading another language. And for a while, I was reading those Ubba Dubba translations of things, but I'm not going to lie to you, I've never been able to speak it. So mainly, I've defaulted to the English ones, and I don't know, you know, when I read something in translation, whether I'm getting all the poetic nuance. For instance, if I was to have this show translated, you'd wonder whether the person doing it was conveying the same things that I was, which is what? I don't know, so there's no way that they could. Maybe they could, but I don't know what I'm saying, and so they probably wouldn't either. I was looking online for a book that I remember when I was a child, and it was called Never Tease a Weasel. So it was about like how, unless you are, haven't been diagnosed with, as a psychopath, you shouldn't torture animals. And I was down with, I've always believed that. So this Never Tease a Weasel, there was a video, it said, this is read along. So they had this Never Tease a Weasel book, and I can't remember the quotes, but they had an AI voice doing it. And the AI voice wasn't reading it like a children's book. It was reading it like it was a script to a podcast. Never give a boat a goat if you're going to, something like that kind of thing. It's just like, no, you got to emphasize that this teaching the children rhymes and language. You've got to like never give a boat to a goat. You don't run it together. Never give a boat a goat unless you're really trying to. And that's what the AI voice was doing. It missed the context. It didn't understand the audience. It didn't understand that the content of the book was only part of it, that the real reason for the book was to help learn language. And so when I travel and I ask myself, where am I? I am using that as a way of asking myself, where am I? In the same way that God asks Adam, where are you? God's omnipotent, omniscient, knows exactly where Adam is. Just saying like, so where do you see yourself now? And I think that's what's going on in travel. I get to go places, and they become sort of a staging ground for my own examination of place. Where do I belong? Who am I away from my place? Do I stay the same? Am I hearty white everywhere? I'll never be big in Japan. Maybe. Maybe it's just about place. I'd love to be about the world. I'd love it to be everywhere and nowhere. I didn't go to Ozu's grave, but on it is the character Mu. And Mu means kind of like nothingness, emptiness. But not nothingness is like no, not real emptiness, but no thing, no one thing, nothing distinguished. It doesn't mean non-existence necessarily. No thing, nothing, nothing. And ultimately, that's where we are. And so I like to see the possibilities of what I can impose on that. Hey, if there's nothing, I'll make samurais on it. And I'll make my own samurais that do different things instead of cut heads off. I'll do samurais that only make tea, only make little sweeties. I will revive all the perished children and make them into eternal trees, great cedars that last hundreds of years, and they'll stand there and watch the mountains. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online, WFMU.org, worldwide, even in Japan online. And thank you for joining me, and I'll see you again next week.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany.
Sure. Sin desvestirte, porque cuando te veo me dejas helado. Y todo lo que digo es que linda alabao. Qué tremendo cuerpo Dios te ha dado. Por eso esta noche yo lo alabo. Escúchame, muchacha, porque yo no juego. Cuando tú me pasas, me prendes un fuego. Escribí esta canción especial para ti. Muchacha bonita, yo te admiro así. Mi amor es más que bueno y te lo puedo jurar. Y si te sientes sola, te deseo acompañar. Por eso yo te digo, con todo mi calor, vamos tú y yo a encontrar amor. Yo te quiero y te amo más que a mi hermano. Por esa razón te necesito en mis manos. Podemos pasear a muchos lugares, pero de tu amor de dar nunca pare. Sé que eres fiera y si tú supieras las cosas que me haces con tus caderas. Si me vuelves loco, te amo mucho, no un poco. Cuando yo maneje, no me toques porque choco. Me arrebata el olor de tu perfume y aunque quiero estar tranquilo, no soy inmune. Es que quiero estar contigo toda mi vida. Te necesito más que la misma comida. Por eso yo te digo, con todo mi calor, vamos tú y yo a encontrar amor.